You are listening to Press Pass, brought to you by GNAT TV.
Hello, and welcome back to another edition of Press Pass on GNAT TV. I'm Andrew McKeever, the news director here at GNAT TV's News Project, and it's a pleasure, as always, to have you with us today. Also a pleasure to be joined here in the studio by two journalists who are here to tell us a little bit about some of the stories they've been working on and the news that's been happening this month. A real pleasure to welcome back to the studio Jim Therrien, who writes for the Bennington Banner, and his work also appears in the Manchester Journal. And also to welcome for the first time Luke Nathan, who is a reporter also with the Banner and the Journal. And Luke, glad to have you with us.
Good to be here.
Glad to have you too, Jim.
It's nice to see you again.
Good to have you back. A lot's been going on this month. August is usually kind of a relatively slow news month, I guess, but it seems like there's been a little bit more activity underway this month than typical, and a lot of it happening down at the southern end of the county in Bennington. And Jim, get us started here. Big story, it seemed to me, down in Bennington this month was the groundbreaking at the Putnam Block.
Yeah.
Years of hard work on the part of several individuals down there and some private sector folks and institutions like the Southwestern Vermont Medical Center and Bennington College coming together. Ground was formally broken. We had the governor come down for and several other state officials for a big event. So that means phase one is now underway, but it's a three-phase project.
Right.
What happens next?
That's the plan. Basically get a slightly different group. They had the Bennington Redevelopment Group, which was the hospital, Bennington College, and Bank of Bennington, several others, and basic top investors. And now you've got another group probably forming with similar but not entirely the same. They might add some, somewhat drop. I think I'm not sure about Bennington College, whether they're in this phase or not. But they're forming, is what I understand, that they're forming the outlines of how they're going to proceed. They have at least some of it's going to be new construction, and they have some of that already, you know, pretty much set in the way they're going to do that. Other things are still being developed, I think, and they're going to be a lot more... a parking lot, like open space, and also environmental remediation done, and so that's being formed. I guess they'll be doing that as the other work is going along, and it had planned to start about a year or be going out to bid about a year after the other one, which. Was launched, like you say, last month. That I don't know what the schedule is. I think they're still thinking about that. But it's basically new construction, parking lot. They'll have to knock down a gas station and part of this at the same time, you'll have something going on at Old Castle, which transferred to the Old Castle Theater during the closing on the very complicated phase one project. So they're working on their fundraising to do the roof again and some other changes there. So you've got three historic buildings on the corner, Putnam and all that going on at the same time. The old courthouse next to it and another one there and then Old Castle. And then probably right next to that, there's at least a good-sized building going there. So some of the players are the same. The hospital is still involved, or healthcare. And then they're planning, after that, a phase three, which is mostly housing of mixed expense. So to see how that goes. But that's phase three, and that's out towards the Washington Avenue area.
Right. So also in Bennington, Luke, we had the return of Max Mish to the headlines. You covered his most recent court appearance. Mr. Mish is someone who has been in the news a lot lately. He was involved, of course, in the situation with former Representative Kaya Morris deciding not to run for re-election after she was trolled by him. And he's also been in some other situations involving ownership of guns that apparently he wasn't supposed to have. And he was back in court again last week. And what was going on there?
Yeah, so Max Mish was back in court a week or two ago being accused of violating his conditions of release on two more counts, I should say, of violating his conditions of release. He had already been accused of violating his conditions of release. And I should say, too, I guess, the original charges that Max Mish is facing were filed in February. He's accused of two misdemeanors of possessing high-capacity magazines that were made illegal by the state last year and purchasing them in New Hampshire, I think, around December of last year, and then bringing them to Vermont. And so those were the initial charges filed in February. He was then later accused of buying a gun at a gun store. His conditions of release had prohibited him from doing that in Bennington in March. And then these two most recent violations of his conditions, it's alleged that he contacted his ex-wife in July, and then that he visited a bar in Hoosick Falls this month. When his conditions prohibited him from leaving Bennington County without the court's permission. So that's five misdemeanors in total that he's now facing. He is still, he remains free without any bail being, he hasn't had to post any bail to secure his release. This has prompted, I think, at least on Facebook, some grumbling about, you know, why is he allowed to continually, you know, allegedly flout his conditions of release and not face any sort of punishment. I mean, I guess one thing is like he's now facing charges that he'll have to answer for, and that he could incur some jail time because of them if he were convicted. But you know what the judge has said, and the AG's office has continually asked for bail to be set. I think because it's only these are only misdemeanor charges. I think they're only asking for about $200 on each of the on each of the counts. Which, you know, is sort of a nominal fee, you might say. But nonetheless, they've asked, and in response, the judge has sided with the defense, who has basically said, look, he's not a flight risk, and bail isn't meant to be imposed as something punitive. It's meant to ensure the defendant's return to court. And Max Mish is returning to court. He seems to revel in the publicity. So that's kind of where things stand. The original charges, I should say, too, both the AG's office, which is prosecuting the case, and Max Mish's attorneys have jointly appealed a determination made by the lower court that basically found that the statute under which Mish was charged for the possession of high-capacity magazines, the judge found that those are constitutional. But they are appealing that determination, and I'm trying. Max Mish himself told me that the higher court has agreed to hear that appeal. I'm waiting for confirmation and maybe some sense of a timeline from both parties on both sides. And I've also reached out to the higher court itself to just be like, can you clarify the timeline for me? So I'm still waiting on that, but I would expect to see that decided sometime in the future.
Is he ever going to wind up going to trial on any of these, or?
I'd imagine so, but appeals can take time, and so this may be a rather protracted matter, and in the meantime he has to continue to abide by the court imposed conditions, in the past, he's, at least according to prosecutors, has run afoul of them on three occasions. So
I don't know how they classify this, but they're actually, sometimes this kind of a ruling can be quick, but it's probably similar to when there's something about the evidence that is being questioned, and they want some kind of opinion ahead of time before the trial's over. to save, because he's going to appeal anyway, they probably can get a ruling ahead of time. And sometimes these can come faster. It's, should this evidence be tossed out? That's a normal one. But this is a little bit different. And Mish will not face any charges if the thing is found to be unconstitutional.
The lower court, in green lighting this this appeal process, basically acknowledged that in his decision the judge had to rely on like out of state precedents and stuff to be able to say yes, this statute is constitutional, because there's not really precedent because it's a new law. It's sort of untested terrain, I guess, and so maybe the AG's office basically said, well, let's save ourselves the trouble on the back end and just jointly go along with this appeal, and just have then we'll know, and then we can prosecute the case.
Otherwise you go through a whole trial and he gets convicted if he does, and then you got an appeal that just goes on and on. Yeah. But assuming that he has money to keep an appeal going, but there was speculation at first that he would have anti-gun control people helping him. I'm not sure if you've heard anything like that.
Interesting.
I don't know about that, but I do know that from my brief time in court covering Mish already, on one occasion he wore a T-shirt that rather crudely expressed his displeasure with gun control in general.
Right.
So I it wouldn't surprise me to see him notwithstanding that he's an avowed white nationalist, seeing him gain some support for his opposition.
So he hasn't never really been charged with anything to do with harassment, because every police agency or attorney general said that he hadn't violated any laws because of free speech rights. If you remember, the attorney general came down here for a press conference and said he couldn't find any reason. And then a little while later, they found that he had bought, or they alleged he bought the large capacity 30 round clips in New Hampshire, after it had already become illegal in October, I think it was, in Vermont. So it does carry possible jail time. Was it up to 1 year, something like that, on each charge?
I'd have to look back at the statute,
A fine and or jail time.
Certainly, I imagine, Mish, who has pleaded not guilty to all these charges, will probably marshal some sort of argument, if he hasn't already, in court about how, noting the timing of Donovan's press conference and then the subsequent charges on unrelated matters, he'll probably make a point of highlighting that.
Unofficially, they already have. Some people have, I think, on Facebook at least.
Moving along, Jim, you had a story earlier this week about an opioid treatment facility that was supposed to come to Bennington. I guess that plan has been shelved now, but there is apparently another entity in town that is stepping up, if that's the right term, to handle some of the many cases of folks who are struggling with opioid addiction. What's going on with that? It sounds like a smaller place that has a fair amount of business, though.
Not necessarily smaller. This Acadia Healthcare, which has a hub-size treatment center in Brattleboro and all over the country, right? Considered to be possibly the largest addiction treatment provider in the country at many locations. And they wanted to put something in Bennington. The state thought it was a great idea. Some officials with the state thought that would be great, because it's supposedly, and like Dick Sears will tell you, that it's underserved, and he's been trying to get more
trying
service
to get
here.
More support for that. For
a lot of people
time.
Have, yeah, and this was supposed to be able to handle as many patients as you could. It didn't have methadone, but it had other outpatient medically assisted drugs that could be prescribed, right? So that they were going to hire, be able to handle 300 to 500 is what they put in their application. But then it dragged on and on, and it was still on the certificate of need website. And finally, I said, I have to find out what's going on. And they had dropped it. They had sent an email and said they were dropping it a couple of, 3 or 4 months ago. So that, and I understand that it was basically because of opposition or unavailability of a suitable site. And there may have been people they thought didn't want to work with them on with the site.
They weren't able to, the plant founder, but in fact they couldn't find the right site for it?
Right. They had a couple, I think they had at least one location they definitely wanted, and it wasn't working out. And I think that was one of the things, but they didn't cite that in their letter. They just said they were dropping it, and I just heard otherwise that it was because of they couldn't work with anyone controlling that site, maybe, or whatever, to get access to have it there. So then I couldn't get somebody on the same day, so I tried the Savita is another group that is in about 5 or 6 states and very big in Massachusetts, and they wanted to expand into Vermont. And they had opened on Dewey Street last year near the hospital in one of the hospital buildings. Well, I finally got a hold of them, and they said that, yes, we've got another site that has around 400 people being treated on an outpatient basis, and it's right on Main Street. But you can't, there's very little notice that it's there, and of course, probably that's good.
So they're sort of filling a void then. Might have been.
Well, that's what they said. We think we filled that gap. Although people who there's a team that works on addiction and services, trying to ensure that they're adequate. Their goal, I believe, is still to have what is called a hub. And I'm not sure. I haven't been able to find out whether they. There's a lot of support for methadone treatment, which is available in places like Brattleboro and North Adams, Mass. So maybe they don't want to do that. That requires a daily trip to the center, whereas these other ones, other drugs, you can have up to a week or so prescription, and then there are other drugs that wean off of the weed in that, and they say they've had a lot of success. They do a lot of drug testing through a laboratory in Chicopee, Mass, that is very rapid and does complex testing, and so that goes along with the treatment. And their 3-month testing, after 3 months of treatment, they said, I think, that 7 to 9% tested positive. The others were negative. So that they also do, of course, counseling. They have caseworkers. They work with UCS, United Counseling, and other providers for different aspects of trying to keep somebody on the right track as far as addiction. And most of these are opioid addiction, but there is also service for alcohol. But that seems like there's both negative and positive aspects to that whole story there.
Well, certainly continues to be a big problem. And certainly is one that's gotten a lot of attention in the past few years.
Right.
Certainly good to see that there's some help being made available to folks down in our area.
Well, now, there have been advocates that, including Fed Up, who's based up here, and others that want to get into housing, supportive housing and other things like that. And they've brought that up to the town. I don't think any decisions have been made, but I think that some on the select board at least are supportive. That would require some kind of grants, I'm sure. But to give people more of a complete wraparound type service.
Right. Right, yeah. I remember that idea came up, I think, a couple of years ago, to have housing for folks who are, you know, struggling with the opioid addiction, and it certainly seemed like a great idea. Moving up Route 7 a few miles to Arlington, Luke, you had a group of stories you've done recently about some actions the select board down there has taken One of them that struck me as very interesting was that one involving the Catholic Church that is no longer being used as a church, right next door to the Arlington Inn there. Is there somebody who wants to buy it?
Well, possibly. Someone did want to buy it, at least. Retired banker Roger Cooper had had the property under contract for a number of months, if not longer. But he, in a newsletter that the local diocese put out a few weeks ago, it said that that deal is no more. It was sort of a cryptic, rather short little blurb in the newsletter. And I called the diocese and tried to speak with Father Tom Madison, but I didn't reach him. I had spoken to him before, but not since the deal fell through. And the newsletter said that Roger Cooper was no longer interested in purchasing the property. And this was part of a larger deal. A number of stakeholders in town want to see that vacant church. It's been vacant for a number of years now. Converted into a multi-use community space. This would be the sanctuary space would be a kind of performing arts center. There's a building in the back of the property that would be like a fitness center. There's another building next to it. The rectory would become office space. So they have a pretty complex and rather, you know, holistic kind of vision for the property, but they want to know, they want to figure out before they go further down this road whether it's feasible. And so they're aiming to apply for a state planning grant for about $60,000 to study whether that vision is financially feasible. The way they had talked about it at Roger Cooper of the Arlington Area Renewal Project is one of the people involved in this vision, putting together this vision. And as he described it to the select board recently, maybe someone like Roger Cooper, not him obviously anymore, but someone like Roger Cooper might own the property, and then one or more nonprofits would essentially operate the space. And it would be some sort of public, maybe a public-private partnership, involved. And Baker has even likened this project, if it were to come to fruition, of having the kind of impact that the Putnam Block project is thought.
This would be Jim Baker, the head of the Arlington Area Renewal Project.
That's right. That's right. He likened it as that for Arlington,
Okay.
But it's not as far along, as the Putnam Block project.
Right.
Presumably it wouldn't cost as much money to fit it up the way they envision. But nonetheless, the town has had preliminarily greenlit the stakeholders to be able to basically use the town as a kind of pass-through to apply for this grant, because the grant can only be given to towns. So the town would be the kind of custodian of the funds, but wouldn't necessarily devote any real resources toward this effort. It would basically be the third party between the two, between the state and the stakeholders. But now that there's no buyer, that's a question is like, well, what if the Catholic, nothing presumably would prevent the Catholic Church now from, selling it to someone else. And even at a previous meeting, Jim Baker, invoked the specter of, say, what if a gas station wants to open up on that property? It's a main thoroughfare, probably a lot of traffic, what if a big box store, So I think that's the Arlington Area Renewal Project's interest, is seeing that whatever comes of that space, that it be seen as something that's beneficial to the town, in a more kind of holistic way than just a gas station or some sort of big box store or something like that.
Yeah. Wondering what the zoning rules are.
Perhaps a use like that isn't even permitted anyway. But I'm just
Absolutely.
And hypotheticals.
You never know what can happen.
Well, maybe Arlo Guthrie would come along and. Right. By the church. No.
So there is going to be a public meeting where the public will be able to review this grant application before it is sent to the state on September 5th. I haven't seen what's in the application. I have some sense of going to these meetings, what is likely to be in it, but that'll be a chance for the public to weigh in also.
And I guess they're also looking at some plans or possible plans or rules around solar, where people, I guess they're designating certain areas in town where solar arrays could be built.
That's right. So this is a process of where, you know, localities under Act 174, which is a couple of years ago, which basically gave localities some control over how they, where they site these large scale, you know, renewable energy projects. So the select board has now authorized the Arlington Planning Commission to send letters to about a dozen or more property owners whose properties the Planning Commission has deemed suitable or potentially suitable for solar installations of that type. You know, usually they are the sites that get a lot of sun. these properties would be designated as a kind of preferred status, so that if developers of solar were to come along and approach these property owners, and the property owners were to say, yes, you know, please install these solar projects on my property, those developers could be entitled for certain financial incentives that they wouldn't otherwise get if they were to try to install on properties not deemed designated by the town. This is a kind of way for towns, again, to sort of steer projects toward places where they want to see them, rather than just have projects come in and them be like, have no kind of infrastructure in place, and so that they can prevent, you know, solar projects from being installed in places deemed unsuitable or deemed unsightly or whatever, but while still giving, you know, places, you know, not blocking it outright, you know, right, giving them places where they can install.
So there'd be sort of like pre-approved zones or lots where, you know, you could fast track a project like that, because it seems like every solar project I think I've ever heard of winds up annoying somebody.
Right.
Creates controversy of one kind or another. It's like somebody, whether it's a next door neighbor or whoever, goes, hey, wait a minute, not in my backyard.
You don't find out until after you filed, usually. But it must be doing an energy plan under 174?
That's right.
Because like Bennington has one. And even with the plan and the designated areas, it's hard to determine sometimes, because there are different rules like size, you know, 175 with them, kilowatts. Or, anyway, you can't be over a certain size. Otherwise, it's sort of considered commercial and you have to go in a certain zone. But there are other factors that can come in. It's a pretty complicated thing to develop one of those.
That's right. And the Bennington County Regional Commission is serving as a kind of liaison and helping Arlington through this process. And they've helped other towns, you know, as well.
Powell has one now,
yeah,
I think.
So other towns are in various stages of the same process. So you're seeing it play out probably all over the state.
That makes sense to have it sort of pre-zoned, as it were, and you know, understood that, hey, you know, this is where they could go, and given the state's ambitious 2050 energy goals, which right, I guess we're not exactly as on track as we would probably like to be around all
like
of
it.
Those, as far as I can tell, that sort of thing is probably going to be happening more frequently.
It definitely boomed for about, well, I guess when Schumlin was in there, it really was pretty active, but I think it slowed down since then, or maybe all the good sites are already used up, but I think a lot of it is emphasis on old gravel pits or old landfills, right, things like that.
Brownfield kind of size.
If you can do that, that's usually welcomed.
Yeah.
Or rooftops and smaller ones.
Well, we're going to have to leave it there for this week. Lots of other stories going on, but maybe we'll have you guys back sometime in
sure,
the very near future and bring us up to date on all of them as well. And just wanted to say thanks to Luke Nathan. Welcome aboard.
Thank you.
On Press Pass. Luke is a new reporter with the Bennington Banner and Manchester Journal. Jim Therrien, of course, has been around the block for a while, once or twice.
Times, yeah.
And great to have you both with us today. And great to have all of you as well. Thanks for watching. Hope you found the show interesting and informative. And we'll see you again the next time. Meanwhile, have a great day.
Thanks for listening local. For more local content, visit gnat.tv.